Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Time for Industry Nights, our weekly segment where we talk about the food and hospitality industry here in Chicago. And today in studio, one of the vets of the industry, you wouldn't know by his face because you're not supposed to see it, Chicago Reader, restaurant reviewer, Mike Sula is in studio. It's going to be hard to talk to you, man, as you're wearing a mask because you are the
just
old.
Just pretend I'm naked.
You are the old school reviewer. Good to see you, first off.
Yeah,
always great to have you here, man, even though I haven't had you on this show, which is crazy to think about. All right, first question out the box. Mike has written for The Reader for years, one of the best food writers, not just in the city but in the country, James Beard Award winner, who and the only food person on Industry Night we've ever had who's wearing a Mexican wrestling mask. Why the mask? Why do you have to still wear the mask?
Well, you know, I don't like it to make it easy for servers and chefs and restaurant managers to recognize me. I don't want them to see me coming, so I have to wear a mask when I go out. I have quite a few of them. I like to mix it up. I don't want to wear the same mask every time because then they know it was me, right? So, so here I am.
When you go to a restaurant, are you still, I mean, it's such an lost art form, the idea of giving a different name or having a different name on a credit card or,
yeah,
or what it is. I mean, you still go with all those sort of OG kind of ways of reviewing restaurants?
Like I said, I don't like to make it easy. I know my picture is up on the wall in some kitchens around town, maybe a lot. I don't know. I've seen it. I have friends that have taken pictures of me hanging on the wall. But, you know, I've been doing it for a long time, and it's inevitable that, you know, the longer you do it, the more you're going to get recognized. But, you know, there's kind of an unspoken contract, too, that, you know, most if they know you're there, they don't make a big deal out of it.
Right.
So,
well, that's what you're trying to avoid, is the fact that they know you're there, so they put on something that might be fake or try to overserve or give you things,
right,
and try to sort of convince you to give a good review by giving you stuff they don't give a regular person.
Sure, sure. And I mean, it's funny, though, because there have been times where I've been pretty sure I've been recognized and I've had just completely atrocious, disastrous service. So I mean, it often doesn't work, and, you know, it doesn't work that way. But, you know, it doesn't, if it happens often, people usually don't let on.
Yeah.
So there's an unspoken bond.
Couldn't that be fixed by just the restaurant industry and the reviewers getting together and being like, okay, we have to do this, you have to do this, like don't be a jerk, you know, or don't try to do things to, you know, is it, or just greed gets in the way?
Well, I think in most cases that is the understanding with this sort of like traditional anonymous form of restaurant criticism. I mean, the lines between the food writing world and the actual industry are so blurred right now. I mean, there's huge segments of the, you know, food media that have no qualms about, you know, taking comps,
yeah, right,
in exchange for publicity. So I don't know. I don't want to say this is like, you know, it's a dying breed, but it is increasingly outnumbered by the other kinds.
I feel like, and as somebody who falls more into the category of general interest, where I'll have chefs on and I will have different restaurant experiences, I've just noticed this over 20 years of doing it, that restaurants today are less likely to comp you out or give you special stuff than, say, 10, 15 years ago. Like, maybe because there's so many writers, there's so many people doing this kind of work or interviewing, that it just seems like that's not even on the table anymore.
It might be. I mean, I'm sure everybody's different. Restaurant margins are, you know, notoriously slim, and restaurants, you know, some restaurants probably have more of an ability to grease the wheels than others do. I think it's probably different on all levels of the industry.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mike Sula in studio. He's a restaurant reviewer for the Chicago Reader, as well as a James Beard Award winner, in studio tonight to talk about his work. You know, as a reviewer, I mean, you have made your name on feature work. I mean, you do a lot of stuff for magazines. You do a ton of work for beyond just reviewing restaurants for the Reader. I mean, the piece you won for was about Cooking Squirrel, which was an awesome piece. But where do you find your happiness? I mean, are you more the kind of writer who likes to dip into the feature work where you're talking about a specific thing like Cooking Squirrels, or are you still, or do you feel like, you know, your bread is buttered when you're reviewing a restaurant anonymously?
Yeah, I love nothing more than like getting deep into the guts of a feature. I mean, that's what I started doing for the Reader. It's 20 years now, 22 years now.
Wow.
That's what I did. I was a feature writer at large with no deadlines and no space limit. And, you know, it was the golden age. I sort of started to find this niche and they needed a restaurant reviewer, and that's what I, and finding myself doing more and more, you know, I had to hit a deadline every week, but you know, I came up writing features, and that's what I love to do.
You know, for you as a writer and someone who has to go across and do a fancy restaurant downtown and then do something else that might be ethnic cuisine on the Northwest side or maybe hit out a suburban restaurant, is there a specific kind of food or cuisine where you're like, this is my jam, this is where I'm at, I want to be here, if I get to choose what I'm reviewing this week, it's always going to be this kind of food?
Yeah, I mean, I think my comfort food is Korean food. I was lucky enough to spend, when I was much younger, I spent about 5 weeks in Korea. My mother-in-law is Korean. She's a great cook. If I have something, you know, if a Korean restaurant coming up on the books, I'm really excited for it. I'm invariably disappointed in it because I've had, you know, I've eaten Korean home cooking in Korea. My mother-in-law is fantastic. So I'm pretty spoiled in that regard, but I still love it. I have a review of a new Korean restaurant in Chinatown coming out next week.
What is it about the food? What is it about those flavors that attracts you?
I don't know. I think it's just, it's super hearty, it's homey, it's comfortable. At the same time, it can be incredibly aggressive and funky and spicy. And it's hugely varied too. I mean, you don't finish a meal without soup and rice, but you could end up starting that meal with, you know, piles of like barbecue or something like that. It's just, you know, it always just seems like a feast. You know, I'll go home for Thanksgiving and my mother-in-law will just lay down just this incredible spread, at the center of which is just maybe like some goat stew, but there's all this attendant stuff around it. So I don't know. It's just, I think it's just like the most inviting, welcoming kind of everyday feast situation.
Mike Sula is in studio tonight. He's the restaurant reviewer for the Chicago Reader, feature writer as well. Done a lot of stuff, including winning a James Beard for Cooking Up Squirrel, writing about Cooking Up Squirrel, and then doing it. But anyway, find that piece. It's good. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. More Mike Sula here on Industry Night. Stay with us. You can do all radio segments where the guest wears a mask. Mike Sula's in studio, the longtime restaurant writer and reviewer, food writer for the Chicago Reader, also a freelancer, also an award winner, but still old school in the way that he doesn't want people to see his face when he's out in public doing interviews, because then the restaurants will be like, there he is! We got him! So he has donned a Mexican wrestling mask tonight. You can check it out, WGNradio.com, the live stream, if you want to see Mike's choice in Mexican wrestling masks. All right, so let's talk about, I mean, let me start with, you work for the Reader, and you've done it for 20-plus years, but you also freelance other places.
Sure.
You are contributing to Dill Magazine, which is new.
Yep.
First tell me about that, but then I also want to ask about just the landscape for food writing in general. But first, let's talk about Dill. Where's Dill come from?
Dill is Dill's brand new. Their debut issue drops on Saturday. Dill is just, there's like a pretty amazing story behind it. Dill is this magazine that's just focuses on the foodways of Asia, the home cooking of Asia. And it was started by a young woman named Shane Chumavanitjakun, who is a sophomore at University of Illinois at Urbana. And she has marshaled an army of seasoned food journalists to help her put this issue out. It's a beautifully lavishly photographed quarterly, and their inaugural issue is on noodles. And there's an international cast of well-known food writers that are in it. Lila Bunyaratabun is in it. She's a half-time Chicago resident who's probably like the foremost expert writing in English on Thai food. Robin Eckhart is in it, who's just a super, you know, well-known and talented food writer based in Penang. I've got a piece in it. I'm writing about the hand-pulled noodles at Jibek Jolu in a Kyrgyz restaurant in Lincoln Square, Lincoln Bend. You ever had those? Lagman. They're the best. They're so good.
Just where is
it? Like fresh hand pulled noodles. Like up on Lincoln Bend. They make these, they take a lump of dough and they stretch it and fold it over and stretch it and fold it over until it's this web of tensile, worms. And they, spin their arms like windmills and slap them on the table. And they're just like these magical noodles. And they're just doused with this, super delicious beef stew. It's fantastic. That's it. It comes out this Saturday. They're doing there's a Thai food festival, Taste of Thai Town, on Pulaski. They're gonna have a booth there. They're gonna be selling the issue 20% off. Also, Green City Market on the 29th. It's pretty cool.
No, they're gonna
they already have like issues in the book. They're actually sending me in October to Thailand for 8 months on an assignment, secret mission.
To 8 months?
No. I'm sorry. No, I might stay. I might just stay for 8 months. 8 days. I'll be gone for eight days.
These magazine budgets, they've really gone up.
Yeah, man. Yeah. The money's gone somewhere, right?
Well, I mean, speaking of the money, I mean, I've always wondered because a couple of years back, there seemed to be more and more food sites that would come out, food magazines, food online opportunities for writers. And at a certain point, they kind of went by the wayside. If we see in 2017, Chicago is less populated in that space.
Mm.
You know, I think about it because I guess the question that I want to ask is how many of those sites were paying food writers to write about it, or how much do they sort of play on the idea that this is a passion, that people love food, and you love to eat at restaurants? Me too. Yeah. I'm going to write about it. I mean, that's sometimes who you have to compete against mm-hmm. as a professional, the idea that there is so much more in the amateur space than there ever was before.
Yeah, I mean, I think, a lot of those sites that shut down, recognize that it's not very profitable and maybe the space was too crowded. I don't know what some of the local food gossip sites pay like, but, I know the Eater National site, they pay pretty well. I wrote a feature for them and it was great. But, I mean, you're definitely right that there's been a sort of a shrinkage in that online food media, but that's also, that's certainly paralleled the print media as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, old school restaurant critics are dwindling in numbers. I mean, we've certainly seen that decrease here in Chicago. I'm essentially the food critic for the Sun Times also. They run my column in the Friday agenda section. So, I don't know. I guess the only thing I can think of is just that it's money. There's not enough.
But as the print world shrinks, and you sometimes and Reader are involved with that right now, and less and less is more and more. The contrast in this case is that the food writing world has exploded, meaning that mm-hmm. every restaurants are on every corner, that there seems to be more interest in food blogs and mm-hmm. food sites. So, I mean, it is interesting to see how major media companies deal with covering the food landscape. I mean, the Tribune has doubled down. They have two or three people.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually really impressive. I mean, I think that's a rare example of a publication bulking up its food coverage.
I mean, is that something that you think might be a trend where you see more and more bulking up of the coverage, whether it be in the New York Times or whether it be at Eater or what have you, because there's just more interest by the eating public to read about the restaurants they want to go to?
There's more interest, but there's a consequent explosion of people just doing it on their own, people that just have passion for it and that don't really care about being paid or don't care about being published in an established mainstream publication. So, I mean, you can, Instagram is actually a great example of this. I mean, there are people that are just incredibly talented photographers and even writers that are doing, incredible research that are just incredible research and work that are just doing it because they love it.
Yeah, it feels like, it does feel to me that I think about Instagram as a good example of I can go to a restaurant now. And I can look at the menu and say, oh, I wonder what this looks like, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I go to the Instagram feed, the hashtag that people have already set up for this restaurant, and all of the dishes are there because somebody else crowdsourced for me and did it. No one's getting paid for that. There's
As I was saying that, I was thinking I'm completely ignoring the Instagram influencers who are getting paid.
Oh, they are.
And it is sort of a pay for play situation where people are actually getting paid to promote brands. Oh yeah, that's completely rampant. I mean, that's a big thing.
So when I'm looking at some of those pictures, those were paid people that are Instagramming the restaurant stuff.
A lot often.
Oh God!
I would.
Mike, you're killing me here.
I'm sorry.
I thought this was the democracy in action.
No, you can usually tell when an Instagrammer continually posts like the same place over and over again. I mean, there's something going on there. Sorry,
nothing
man.
Is real. Mike Sula in studio. He is the restaurant reviewer and writer for the Reader and the Sun Times.
Yeah.
As you said that.
Yeah.
Mike, of course, an award-winning James Beard Award winner. As well as a freelancer who works in other places, including Dill Magazine, which is just coming out this Saturday. You know, as I think about your perch at the Reader, I mean, 20-plus years, you must have seen so many different trends, you know, from the small plates explosion to no reservations to people arguing about what's online, what's not. I mean, do you notice that as a reviewer? Do you notice from sort of being in it, When a whole industry or a whole scene kind of shifts and we go from one kind of restaurant to another?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny because when it happens like that, it's almost that you don't notice it gradually, but suddenly you look around you and you notice that, wow, you know, a dozen pizza places opened this year. A dozen like high end artisanal pizza places opened this year. They're everywhere. I don't want to go to another one. It happens all the time. And right now the thing is, you know, it's amazing how, you know, just a few, I would say, you know, maybe 6 years ago, Chicago was known as like this, the pork, you know, but the
oh yeah, right.
You know, the pork belly of the nation. And it was just everywhere, awful meat. And right now that's like swung completely full circle. And, you know, it's actually all over the country. That's like, these vegetable forward restaurants are everywhere. I just went to one tonight. I can't tell you what it is. But places like Clever Rabbit and Bad Hunter and this place from New York called Little Beet Table, they're all doing just these vegetable forward restaurants. There's some meat on the menu. It's funny because there's actually a little known city ordinance that requires every one of, if you have more than 70% of vegetables on your menu, you have to put a burger at the bottom of the menu. They all have burgers. So there's these mostly vegetarian restaurants that have like a big, like a double cheeseburger.
That's like one councilman's like goes in front of the alderman, city council's like, there needs to be burgers down here.
Yeah, that was Burke's ordinance.
That's right, that was Burke's.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. Can you stick around after the news and we can talk about what your favorite restaurants are right now?
Yeah.
I realize we should, while we have you here, and we can talk about what you should go eat this summer. Mike Sula is the restaurant writer and reviewer and critic for the Chicago Reader and the Chicago Sun-Times. And he joins us here on Industry Night tonight. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Mike, you'll love this. Buddy Matt Klein, who did the nickname segment last year on the show, he just texted and said, I just did Google image searches of the noodles on the Yindi menu.
Oh.
I would never have tried the delicious pan cow guy without the visuals.
All right.
So there you go. I don't know if he got it right, but he tried.
Good enough.
Good enough. Mike Sula, restaurant reviewer and critic and feature writer for the Chicago Reader and the Chicago Sun-Times in studio tonight. You know, we're going to talk a little bit, and then Glenn Mercer's going to join us from the Feelies coming up after the break. You know, I didn't want to leave here without talking about what you think the hot places to go are in Chicago right now. Because, I mean, beyond just sort of what you can get from, you know, what's the high-end places to be, Chicago has new stuff, but also some favorites. And, you know, if this is a treat to Download Nation that Mike can share some of his favorites for the summer. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I've got two new-ish sort of essential summertime eats that I just recently got hip to. I was in Chinatown late last month on the first really hot, sweaty day of the year. And, you know, it was the middle of the week. And it was dead. It was like a ghost town. The restaurants were empty. There was nothing going on. I looked down Wentworth, and there's this group of teenagers all hanging out outside this ice cream parlor called Legend Tasty House that opened in the really inconvenient month of June. But you know, in January.
Oh,
but in June, it's
packed. Yeah, it's perfect.
And you,
yeah.
You know, you walk in and everybody is standing in front of the counter with their phones up, Instagramming the people working behind the counter. The easiest comparison to make is Cold Stone Creamery. You know, they're working on a marble slab, like slapping the ice cream around. These are steel metal pans, at 20 degrees Celsius, and they're pouring this, liquid custard on like a crepe, and maybe taking a piece of fruit or some cookies or something and smashing it into it. And they're taking those metal spatulas and spreading it around and flipping it and chopping it up until it starts to crystallize into ice cream. And they spread it in this thin layer, and they take the spatula and they roll them up in these sort of 4-inch-long parchment scrolls and stand them up in a cup and put all sorts of garish flair on them, like gummies and whipped cream. And it's this summertime ice cream treat that just seems like it's made for Instagram. And it's delicious. It's like subtly sweet. You can get like your chocolate, your mango, your strawberry, but you also get weird things like avocado and durian. And, it's no Mario's Italian lemonade, but it's kind of a little phenomenon right now. And
what's it called again?
It's called Legend Tasty House.
Legend Tasty House.
On Wentworth in Chinatown.
That's a good one. All right. Mike comes through with one. What do you got for another one?
I highly recommend people go to the Daily Plaza Farmers Market on Thursdays and direct yourself to the southeast corner of the plaza. There's a place called Baked Cheese House in the German spelling. And what they're doing is raclette sandwiches. Raclette is this stinky French or Swiss cheese that comes in big wheels. They have these half wheels set on this contraption that's like a stand, and there's a heat lamp over the flat side. And there's a guy there who has a large split baguette in one hand with maybe some ham lined down it. And he takes this cheese wheel and he turns it at an angle and scrapes this molten lava flow of cheese onto the sandwich, squirts it with Dijon mustard and hands it over. And the people just sort of stand around this sign like zombies waiting for their sandwiches. It's like a fantastic sandwich. It's just really incredible. Those are the two places. Yeah,
huh?
I think so. Summertime.
I love it.
Uh-huh.
I love that it wasn't some hot hoity-toity place on Randolph.
Yeah, well, there's those two. There's a few of those too.
All right, good. Mike Sula, a restaurant reviewer, critic, feature writer for the Chicago Reader and for the Sun-Times. You can catch him. He's an award winner. He won the James Beard. I keep saying that. This piece that won, the squirrel piece, it was fascinating. The way I explained it earlier in the show and got some attention, some people texted in about it, was that it's illegal to cook. Is it illegal to eat squirrel or catch squirrel and eat squirrel?
It's illegal to trap squirrels in Illinois. There is a squirrel hunting season. You can shoot them. You cannot shoot squirrels in the city of Chicago.
All right.
I can't tell you how I got my squirrels, but I got them. It's a long time ago, but you know what? The mayor sent me a really nice letter congratulating
me.
So I think I can use that in any case against me. I'm going to just produce that as my get out of jail free card.
Was the idea of the piece to sort of push back on the rule, the ordinance that says no trapping squirrels, or was it to really see, feel what like taste a squirrel and put it into
a dish? I mean it really is. I mean, there are there are a tremendous number of squirrels that live and die every year in the city of Chicago. It's just extraordinary. It's actually like sort of a sustainable meat that you could if you're good enough you could survive on if you had to. I was just sort of exploring that idea of like what is acceptable protein to eat, and I concluded that squirrel is perfectly acceptable.
There it is.
It's Mike's, delicious too.
That's a good story. You can still find it on the Reader, I'm sure. Mike Sula at the Reader and the Sun Times, my guest tonight. I was just getting used to the mask. I was just the Mexican wrestling mask that Mike is wearing.
I can keep wearing it.
Good, good. Great to see you, man. Thanks for coming.
Likewise, thanks, Justin.